Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. Alright, enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy and a man who's going to have to carry the pod today. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Truly, I am the Van de Ven of
you are
defending the Extra Inch.
I need you to thump one into the top corner, yeah. Please. I beg you. We've got no Bardi. He was off running a marathon, and he got his time. He did so well. I feel so happy for him. I'll let him tell you about that next time he's on. And unfortunately, I am very unwell. I've been suffering from a cluster headache. I get these things called cluster headaches. I wouldn't recommend them to anyone. And I've had it all day, which is very unusual. Normally, they last an hour or two. And I've had this since 9 a.m. And I'm kind of only just coming around from it. So it's going to be a short pod, I'm afraid. Nathan, as I was saying your name at the start, I'm saying my own name. How are you feeling about Nathan A. Clark these days?
It's fine. It's all right. It's something that has occurred to me in the last year is like the infamous basketball and beyond ESPN mega pundit Stephen A. Smith. That like there's a similarity there that I'm not so keen on because he's like a professional reactive idiot, right?
Right.
I don't know. It's fine. It's fine. It's what it is.
I mean, the reason I say it is because the other day I was thinking, I'm 40 years old. Do I still want to be calling to myself Windy? Mm. It feels very silly. And I was vaguely thinking of making a change.
Too late. It's too late. It's done.
You reckon? Yeah,
you're Windy now.
Yeah. Forever. Stuck with it. Stuck with it until the day I die. Okay. Wonderful. let's talk about Forest. I mean, maybe we'll talk about West Ham in a bit. But it always feels weird going back two games. But Forest is fresh in our minds. I watched this on delay because I was at Wembley to watch Wickham in the EFL Trophy final. So I managed to get home without knowing the Spurs score and watched it as if live. But it meant I was watching it late and fueled by a few drinks. And I've not had a chance to rewatch today, owing to the fact that I've been bedridden. What did you make of the game?
I've been ill recently, which I think we mentioned to the patrons.
Sickliest pod going.
Yeah, I've been unwell the last few weeks, and especially over the weekend. So I was very underslept. So I watched it in a bit of a stupor. I didn't really consciously receive the second half. So I've rewatched a couple of times today, and I went back and rewatched West Ham as well. I don't think either of us had a great first-hand fan experience feel for the game, but I will say that the Van de Ven's goal hit pretty hard. That woke me up for just a moment.
Have you seen the view from behind?
No.
Oh my goodness. Someone posted it in the Discord earlier. There's a camera angle where you just see from right behind the goal him just smash it and it stays smashed. And oh my goodness, it looks so good from that angle. What a clean hit.
There's a wasp in the room I'm recording in right now. So if I suddenly, you know, run away screaming or whatever, that's what that's about. Anyway, we'll stick with it.
Yeah, okay. Aside from the Van de Ven goal, I've seen quite a lot of, I want to say, complaints about this one. I think I think it's because we didn't match Nottingham Forest's XG total, sure. and people just sort of look at that and see it as a therefore bad performance. I think there were some aspects which were not great, but I thought there was some really good stuff in there as well. And I guess the thing is, it's the third game in quick succession. And so, you know, it's reasonable that we look sort of slightly leggy, not our sort of normal selves as such. And I thought that was true of the West Ham game as well. I thought we looked tired, especially by the end of the game. But yeah, were you unduly concerned about the Forest performance?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't our most exhilarating game of the season, for sure. I liked that we were proactive with substitutes. I actually, having watched back, don't think that they made a huge change to our performance first half versus second half, but enough, a few percentage points enough to see out the win. Really a lovely couple of goals, not terrible defensively. It's just, it is what it is. And obviously it's so much better than it has been for several, you know, for the majority of the last few years, that I'm not going to take it for granted.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I did feel like it was reminiscent of several games under Pochettino, where we...
Like games versus low blocks under Pochettino.
Yeah, where we are imperfect, but kind of just get the job done, and then you move on to the next one and you don't worry too much about it. And then when you kind of look at them as a collective and look at the results and think of them as a sort of overall package, then you reflect in a more positive light. I think if you analyse it blow by blow, then yeah, sure, it doesn't look all that great because we gave up several chances to Chris Wood, who's, you know, not the greatest striker in the world, albeit very effective. But taken sort of as a whole, got the job done at home in a game that was played at a really unusual time. So, you know, not great for the fans, probably not great for the players in terms of their pre-match routine as well. And the result was the most important thing, particularly as it means we now go fourth and it's kind of in our hands again, which is really important, I think, for this crazy running we've got.
Yeah, I think that's all there is to it. Do you want to talk about starting 11?
Yeah, I was slightly surprised that Bentancur went back onto the bench. I understand some people felt that he didn't play particularly well against West Ham.
Sure.
I disagree. I thought he had a perfectly passable game, and I think it was the right selection, and he probably came off at the right time. And I thought he'd start this again, to be honest, because I was expecting us to have quite a lot of the ball against the low block, and therefore it makes sense for Bentancur to be in place, in my opinion, because of his kind of, how do I say this? His quicker, his ability to move the ball more quickly than Sarr.
Okay.
Broadly. Obviously, Sarr has been critical this season in transition.
Yeah.
But I felt this was a game where there'd be the pattern of play would be that we'd monopolize the ball, and therefore what Bentancur can offer is kind of more important for the game. Did you think there was something in that, in the kind of decision to play Sarr?
No, I just think a general rotational thing. I think if there's going to be, you know, of the three games, one where we have it most, it would be West Ham, and therefore for the reasons you said, Bentancur should start that one, and therefore maybe not the others because he's still, you know, building fitness. And I would also say, like, yes, Sarr isn't the most technically brilliant for when we've got tons of the ball and a bunch of space and trying to unlock a defense. But then at the same time, as you point out, he's crucial transitioning in both directions. And Forrest definitely held a transitional threat throughout the game. And therefore, maybe Sarr was appropriate, you know, for defensive reasons, for that reason. So I really didn't mind that. I would obviously love to have seen Richarlison get more than the 4 minutes or whatever he got across these two games. And it looks like he is nursing a knee injury, which is a real shame because we missed his profile in both these games. But otherwise, I wasn't too surprised or disappointed or whatever with the starting 11.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point about Richarlison. So Simon, who is from Lincoln, but formerly of Guernsey, he specifically wanted me to say that he's formerly of Guernsey, so his friends in Guernsey know who he is. Simon says, it strikes me as over the past month in particular that Son has turned down shooting chances on the edge of the box or just outside because he can't find that shift of movement quick enough to get a shot off. Feels like he shuffles and then passes. It worked yesterday because he assisted Van de Ven, but typically you'd want him finding that quarter yard to spank it. And yeah, I really strongly agree with that. I think Son has been looking like he's been struggling a little, and it's no surprise because he's played a lot of football over the past year with very little break. And that's not just for Spurs, that's for South Korea as well, where there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And I think it really did show in the last two matches. I think there were several opportunities, particularly in the Forest game, where he could have tried to get some separation and get shot away. And I think had Richarlison been fit, then maybe we'd have seen a bit more rotation there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's this interesting thing where, like, for most of his career, obviously, Son's played in a wide role, and a wide role is typically a more supportive one. And then he's moved into being the number nine for Postecoglou, who, again, historically has been a player. The number nine in Ange Ball is typically a player who just has one touch and it's for shooting. And that's their involvement. And it's at this moment in time that Son has decided that he wants to be a considerably more selfless player and is seeking out assists and laying the ball off a ton. It's kind of curious. But again, I think, as we talked about last week, that's related to him seeing less of the ball and therefore maybe being a little less out of practice with taking the shot first time, not necessarily first time, but taking long shots, getting a yard of space for himself rather than looking for teammates, that kind of thing. It might be, you know, a little bit of the captain's mentality type yeah. situation. I want to talk about long shots in this game, actually, because this was a recurring theme again between the two matches, which I think are probably worth mostly talking about together, right? There was quite a bit of commentary on our lack of long shots against West Ham and our surplus of long shots versus Forest, right? And lots of speculation. I saw that this was instructed, that we're instructed not to shoot from distance generally. And I think that that is probably true because, again, our style of play is about creating those sort of 0.6, 0.7 expected goal chances for our number nine over and over and over again. But then it also a suspicion contrary to that we were instructed to shoot from distance against Forest. And I'm not going to say that I definitely think that that's not true, but I went back and I watched the Forest game. I rewatched the West Ham game. Basically, West Ham defended with more players and prioritised the centre of the pitch more, whereas Forest allowed themselves to get drags wide in number and also wanted to keep at least one, sometimes two, sometimes even three players ready for the counter. So simultaneously, they were more vulnerable defensively than West Ham were, but also they offered more on the threat than West Ham did. If you look at West Ham's chances from their game, they had two good chances from set pieces, basically, and they had a counter that Vicario saved, and if he hadn't, they'd almost definitely have chalked it off for the foul on Madison, and maybe a foul on Van de Ven, although I'm less sure of that one. They might not have given that one. So basically, West Ham only ever created from set pieces, which I'm not trying to delegitimize, only from an analysis point of view, they offered very little in transition, and that's despite, you know, Kudus being just far too good to play for West Ham. Like, there are a number of occasions where Kudus did, like, dribble three Spurs players, was still alone, and then lost out to the fourth Spurs player, you know, because he's just trying to, he's left alone to do it all on his own with only Antonio running away from him. So yeah, West Ham, it was really important for them that they defended midfield with their wide players, defended the space in front of the box with their wide players, so there wasn't the opportunity for shots. And when I was watching the West Ham game, and it's not the first game of the season, I think we've had this conversation before, you've got Spurs fans saying, why aren't we just shooting? And it's like, show me the opportunity that we had to shoot. Whereas Forest, again, able to drag them out wide, open up space in the middle, space for cutbacks, and then you've got your shooting opportunities, and both Bissouma and Højbjerg in both halves had a number of shots. And Van de Ven's, okay, he's inside the box, but it's a shot from distance. Although I will add that a number of those shots from distance came after short corners rather than from open play. So I think in terms of shooting from the edge of the box, that was the difference. The opposition were the difference rather than our approach. I don't think we have been turning away too many shooting opportunities this season, to be honest.
Mm. That's really interesting. I think... So it's a massive talking point amongst our fan base at the moment, the just whack it kind of element of, well, Bardi's been calling for us to just have a few more pot shots and see what happens for weeks now. And I imagine it's because the type of football we play relies on patience. It relies on constantly moving the ball from side to side, trying to drag the opposition into making a mistake. Trying to create a situation where we suddenly have an overload because someone hasn't tracked their man or moved into the right space. And then we, you know, hit the byline, get a cut back in, and someone makes the run to the near post or back post and gets a tap in. Extremely high XG chance.
So we definitely look to overload with numbers in areas, but I think that we also put a big focus on the mental overload. Yeah. So a sustained period of time where we're making the opposition actively defend until they make a mistake, because they've had to do that continuously for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And if you're breaking up those 5 minutes plus of pressure with a shot from distance, then you are undermining that game.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Especially against teams like this, who will then, you know, take a good 30 seconds over the goal kick, maybe even 45, maybe even a minute. Yeah. Suddenly you've lost a minute where you were maintaining attack after attack after attack, wave after wave. You've given the ball to the opposition, and you might win it back from the goal kick immediately, but you've given them a chance to regroup, given them a chance to take a breath, given them a chance to maybe even get some instructions on the pitch. And so I can understand it from both perspectives. From a fan's perspective, it is frustrating to have all this amount of pressure but not actually have a shot to show at the end for it. But I do think overall it's beneficial to maintain the sort of keep the pressure on, keep the ball, look for the right opening, not just any opening. Having said that, like you say, there were plenty of pot shots in the Forest game. Interesting, I thought, that they often came from Bissouma or Højbjerg, the deepest of the midfield players.
Yeah.
Why would that have been?
Well, I'll get to that in just a second. I just want to clarify, although my general position is work the shot, work a high quality shot in the box, don't keep taking pot shots. Forest, again, were so open to those shots from the edge of the box that it's now swung the other way, and I think we did the right thing in that situation. So I spoke, was it last week or the week before, about why I think Bissouma's performances are massively underrated, because most of the time he is being man-marked by one, often in fact two players, and they just aren't letting him free, and they're prioritizing him so highly that it opens up space elsewhere. And if he just stands there and absorbs that player, I think he's doing a good thing for the team. Forest didn't do that. Forest is the first team in a long time to try to press the center backs, have Chris Woods leave Bissouma to go and press Romero. What a stupid thing to do. And also, you know, not keep pressure on him when they're in their own third and allow Bissouma free, which is interesting, right? Because I thought Bissouma had, as a result of that, one of his more involved, more exciting games on the ball in the first half.
Same.
And he was subbed at halftime. It's kind of like we talked about Kulusevski against Luton. Was it Luton? Subbed at halftime.
Yeah.
After, I think, a perfectly good first half performance, right? It's like this player is doing so well because of the tactical context. Let's put a player who will take even better advantage of that, right? And if your six isn't being pressured, and if your six has got time in the ball, yeah, Højbjerg's the better player for that, because he's going to be more direct. He's going to take higher risks in possession. I've accused Højbjerg of forcing things in the past, right? But on this occasion, yeah, let's take some risks in possession. Let's start spraying the ball, both from in our own half and also just to switch it across. So I was quite happy with that in terms of in possession. But I also think that there was an out of possession consideration here, in that, again, we were struggling with Forest's transition in this game. Something we've been doing recently, I think, is at the moment of transition, Bissouma, we're now playing him very, very aggressively. He goes up and immediately puts aggressive pressure on the ball, aggressive pressure on the player receiving. And Saar, his job is to instantly turn and sprint back and cover the space that Bissouma leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't functioning well in this game, in my opinion. And I'm not sure if there's a particular tactical reason for that. I'm not sure if it's something that Forest were doing that was also potentially costing them defending the edge of their own box, or if it's just because Bissouma's playing his third game in a week, right? But either way, you change that out. You say, okay, Højbjerg, Bentancur, go on and defend normally. Do a normal defending. And that worked a little better. Again, not enormously better, in my opinion. Again, Forest still had threat in the second half. Because again, also like we talked about recently, we keep three players behind the ball when we attack in the final third. And they're all no wider than the center circle. Surprise, surprise, there are acres of space where most teams have a fullback and we have neither. We defend in it with a 2 and a 1. And so, like, maybe, and hopefully in a year or 2 years' time, we're on the edge of glory, right? But we can't quite clinch the title. We can't quite win the semi-finals and finals because the best teams in the world that we're coming up against in these scenarios are able to counterattack down our wings. And at that point, I will say, hey, maybe if we want to take the final step, we need to find a way to make an adjustment to say, we need to create a three when we attack in the final third. We need either a midfielder to go wide or to drop in, or we keep one fullback, probably not that. Probably Saar comes deeper in the play, something like that, to better defend against transitions. Maybe that will be the final step for us. But I think for the foreseeable future, we're just going to be a team who can be got at in transition. And it's worth it because we score three goals down the other end. And at least for the time being, I'm okay with that. In my opinion, the focus should be reliably getting those three goals down the other end.
Yeah. Hey, look, I watched Brentford Villa the weekend, and Villa do keep those players back, and they still conceded three goals to Brentford. So it could be worse, right?
Yeah. And of course, both games, West Ham, Forest, big opportunities and goals coming from set pieces. So let's defend our set pieces better, and then open play will be considerably less concerning, and they will even, there's less value in them turning a counter into a corner if we can defend corners better.
Indeed, and also let's improve our own set pieces so that we've got the lead earlier in games. Well, and it forces teams to come out, which we then can exploit.
Yeah, bunch of short corners. Nearly every corner taken short in this game, and a number of shots following a short corner from the edge of the box, including Van de Ven's absolute steel toe cap smasher, all backswing, golf club rifling into the roof of the net. So points for Ryan Mason on
I agree. Moby actually asked about that as well. He said, is there any data supporting how effective short corners are?
Short answer, yes. But don't take that too far and go the other way and be like, let's always take all of our corners short, because you have to maintain the threat of the direct ball in order to take advantage of the space outside of the box that creates. And the teams in the world who are best at set pieces frequently score goals from directly swinging the ball into the box and often preparing for the second ball after that. And then occasionally they'll mix in a short corner to take advantage of teams worrying about the direct ball, and then you do the opposite later, right?
Absolutely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ram says, why don't we look as good as early in the season? We actually had lower expected goals than Forest yesterday. Is it that Maddison and Bissouma aren't quite hitting their early form, or are teams dealing with this better? What tweaks to our play do you hope Ange does next season? Well, Nathan's already spoken about a potential tweak further down the line there, but I think you kind of nailed it, Ram, with your second point, which is teams are dealing with us better because there are a few blueprints on how to play against Ange Ball now, whereas at the start of the season there were fewer. It wasn't obvious how we were going to play, and then teams did start to adjust to the fact that we had these inverted fullbacks and we left space wide. And I think that's it. I think it's the element of surprise is gone. And so we're having to figure out other possibilities and other ways. And I think the fact that we've maintained generally our levels, the fact that we're still fourth in the league at this point in the season, despite that, is a huge feather in the cap for Ange so far.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that teams are largely giving up trying to press us now. They know that if you try to press us, you get punished for it. Forrest even tried to like do a low press. They tried to be active on the centre backs from when we had the ball in the final third. And I think that cost them in this game. And maybe even teams will stop going as far as that even. And I think that like that's kind of the ultimate compliment. Tifo did a video last weekend, I think, on like, has Guardiola made football boring because his style of football is so effective that every team just parks the bus against him because that's the only way you can possibly hang on to the game, right? And that's kind of becoming true for us, is that we're forcing teams to defend with 9+ players all the time, which again, I think is just a compliment of our effectiveness. And again, I think that we reach the next stage and we make that a horrible thing for them to experience anyway, because we just throw goals at them. Specifically on the expected goals, you don't get any expected goals for an own goal in most models. And that, you know, if you think of like, if that had been Sun rather than, what's the name of the defender? Murillo, then that's like a 0.6 chance or something. And things look a little better for us in that regard. I think and if you looked at the expected threat, similar story. We were getting in and around their box. We were getting possession in the box, plenty. We dominated. I'm not too worried about the expected goals, but I accept the comment that we don't look as good as we did earlier in the season. And in fact,
yeah,
opening game of the season was Brentford, right? And there are a couple of early games where teams, you know, defaulted to low block against us and we kind of blew them away anyway. So yeah, we've slowed down a little bit. I think part of that is that, is profile of forwards. We're lacking Richarlison against the low block. That's hurting us. You had some comments about Sun earlier. I'm not, and other people have been quite critical of Sun recently. Sun's an incredible player. He's a truly, truly brilliant player, and I'm not concerned about his performances. I just think that he's a missed profile match for, you know, being in a box that have got 7 other players in it at the moment, and that's no fault of his, and he's still played well despite that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, I agree. Sun is incredible, and I think his productivity makes him undroppable, yep, in a sense. But I have been frustrated over the past few games by some of his touches, some of his dithering on the ball. I miss on picking up the ball wide, cutting in and getting shots away. I do miss that when he's playing through the middle, but I accept that he's scoring enough and assisting enough to justify that at the moment. I also think that Timo Werner is doing a fantastic job on the left wing. What did you make of Werner in this game?
Really, really good again. His crossing game, his assist production from the left-hand side has really put him a tier ahead of our other wide players, and that includes Kulusevski, who's, you know, been is clearly an exceptional player of his own. Created the opener against West Ham, forced the own goal in this game. He did also at West Ham keep checking his run for the reverse winger to winger ball. And I feel like this is pop psychology from an amateur, right? But I feel like that's in some way connected to his poor finishing. It's like that lack of, well, I'm just going to go for it, right? Maybe the ball won't reach me, but I'm going to make the run just in case. It's the same kind of, oh, the ball's coming to me. What if I miss this chance? Oh, no. Instead of being like, oh, good, the ball's coming to me. I get a good chance to score a goal now. It's like, oh, I don't want to make that run in case it's wrong. Take some risks, man, because, yeah, we really struggled with West Ham's low block. Again, they really prioritised the centre, which is the correct way, in my opinion, to defend against Spurs. Match the inverted fullbacks, cover the edge of their own box. You know, a bunch of big lads in the box against Sun. But if Werner had made the run to the back post a couple of times, we were probably still getting a couple more in that game, and we, you know, dominated territory in that game, dominated the chances outside of the set pieces. It was really frustrating to watch, but watching it back today and analysing it, without a target man, we did about as well as we can, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's just coaching, isn't it? The kind of Werner back post movement. It's just, you know, look what Ange has done with Johnson and the amount of times he does gamble. He's had less time to work with Werner. It's just repeating the action. It's constantly, you know, can you get into the back post when Johnson's got his head down about to make a cross? Can you get across your man? And that will come over time. And I think there is a bit of a debate at the moment as to whether we sign Werner permanently. One of the things I've seen raised in the Discord is, you know, I really don't want to end up in a situation where two of our wingers are Solomon and Werner. And I'm like, we don't need to end up in that situation. We don't need Solomon in the squad. No. Like, Werner is a very, very, very good player. Also, a really good professional. Like, I think he raises the standards of the squad in more ways than just his through his productivity. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, going into next year with Kulusevski, Werner, Johnson, and then a really other outstanding dribbly winger, I think would stand us in really good stead.
Yeah, I think so. And get rid of Hill and Solomon.
Yeah, exactly. And it does seem from the reporting today that Ange is prepared to get rid of Brian Hill. That's, you know, he's prepared to cut his losses and just take what we can get for Hill at this point, which I think is best for all parties. Like, I do think Brian Hill is a good player and I think he'll go on to have a good career, but he's not a fit for Ange Ball. It's clear at this stage he's not a fit for Ange Ball, so it's time to move on from him.
I think Conte was right that he's not fit for the physicality of the Premier League.
Yeah, really?
Unfortunately, simple as that.
Yeah, it's a pity because there's a lot of potential there in terms of his technical ability, but it hasn't worked out. Sometimes they won't, and that's fine. I just wanted to talk about Højbjerg briefly. I've been, as you know, quite up on Højbjerg's contributions this season. I think he's been really important in terms of coming off the bench and seeing games out and adding an element of control. It seems clear to me that Højbjerg is going to leave at the end of the season. I think that is the right move for him. He's a player that should be playing every week for a slightly lesser team than Spurs, or maybe not even
a slightly lesser team,
but a different team. Yeah. That said, Højbjerg has this tendency to
change games.
Come on, play really well, and then do something batshit crazy where you just think, "What are you doing? What goes through your brain?" Maddening player sometimes.
Yeah. He gave the ball away in the box. That's what you're referring to, right?
Yeah, and then like a second later, he gave it away again, or put it out for a throw, or whatever, with a sloppy pass. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's such a competent player. He's a good kind of all round technician, and he has these moments of absolute madness. And you kind of see why he gets so much shit from fans, because it is very frustrating to watch.
Yeah. Well, like I said,
but he does make a difference and has made a difference.
Yeah. And I think that plenty of credit to go to Højbjerg because he has put in those performances. He has come off the bench. He has changed games for us. In this game in particular, I think you can say Postecoglou took an attacking risk, right? He took off the safe, tidy, neat, secure player, and he put on someone who in and out of position is more expansive, takes more risks, and that paid off for us. It also means that he will give the ball away in his own box every now and then, to the rate of maybe once every other game, which is a lot. But also he hit the big switch that led to Porro's goal. Yeah. And Basuma's not hitting that ball. If he tries to, probably puts it out of play because he's not good at those passes.
Yeah, or floats it or whatever.
Yeah, and it kills the tempo.
Yeah.
But I think that whilst a significant part of it is Højbjerg's profile and what he brings and what he has that's different to Basuma, just as much is bringing on a player with specific instruction. Literally the advantage of just being a different person to the one that started the game. And I think that with other profiles, potentially similar things can be achieved with players that aren't Højbjerg. That said, Højbjerg is such a safe bet. I really don't mind him sticking around in the squad. Like, if Atletico or whoever can't put up the money, I know he wants to leave, and I agree that he deserves first team football, but he's a useful player to have in the squads.
I agree. I like, if Ange can convince him that there are enough games to keep him happier next year, then have that conversation as far as I'm concerned. Like, he is a good player to have in the squad for sure. I'm also really intrigued to see what happens with his hair once it's grown out.
I'm not enjoying
it's in that mid phase at the moment, which just looks horrific.
It's not great right now.
Yeah. I remember that when I had hair, when I was younger and I grew long hair in my teens, and I remember that mid fade and just like, just need to get through this. Yeah. Just need to kind of grin and bear it for 2 months. It's going to look horrendous, but I just throw a load of gel in it and push it back and hope for the best, or just let it go wild and get through this. And then it's going to be a masterpiece.
I not anymore, but I used to have curly hair. And so in the middle phase, when it was growing out but light, it was really curly. It was like ringy, and it was quite. And people said that I looked like a cherub because of how curly it was around my ears.
Little blonde ringlets.
Yeah. So I had an even worse mid length phase than Hoivio's going through. So yeah, you reminded me there. Good reason to be sympathetic.
Last question, because I really do need to go and lie down. RP, who has brackets Team Timo in his Discord username, says, after what seems like a long run of facing teams sitting back and looking to counter against us, how do you feel about our upcoming fixture run of Doom? Could we benefit from more space to run in behind against the top sides? Or do you think that any will play similarly to how Villa set up against us, for example? How do you see these matches going?
Who have we got, Wendy?
Okay, so let's go through these games. It doesn't make pleasant reading. Next match is away at Newcastle. I'm not sure that kind of counts. But then we have Arsenal at home, Chelsea away, Liverpool away. And then we've got to fit in the City game somewhere as well. Some interesting matchups. I watched the Arsenal against Brighton game.
Yeah.
It's 3-0 Arsenal in the end. But I thought Brighton started really well.
Oh, really?
And they were causing Arsenal quite a lot of problems. Danny Welbeck was playing through the middle, and he kept kind of dropping into the space between defence and midfield, and they were playing into his feet, and he'd kind of take a touch and get turned, and then he'd have options either side in Dingra, and who was playing on the left? It was, Enciso, who I really like. And I thought that was working pretty well for them, to be honest, before Arsenal stepped it up. And it made me think that I think Richarlison would be a good profile fit for the Arsenal match.
Sure.
Not against a Son, Richarlison, Kulusevski front three for that match, on the basis of how effective I thought Brighton were. But what do you think more generally? Do you think like having some space to run into will help us in certain ways?
On a general point, absolutely. On a general point, I'm excited for bigger games. I'm excited for teams who will have essentially no choice but to come out and play against us. And that goes as far as Newcastle away. But specifically, unfortunately, Arsenal are maybe the best defensive team going at the moment. Unfortunately, Arsenal tweak the way that they press game to game in a really quite exceptional manner. And in the reverse leg, kept us pinned with their counter-pressing better than anyone has done all season, although obviously that was early days. So I'm worried about their pressing game and how they'll set up, but also curious. And then at the same time, I don't think I want us to take any points off of Liverpool or City for related reasons.
It's really hard, isn't it? Because the thought of Arsenal in the league is just so
makes me sick, man.
Yeah, but I mean, Villa have got a tough run as well. But if it comes down to it, and we're not going to make top four without taking some points, you just, oh god,
I would come 17th to prevent Arsenal really? From winning the league.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to that view. To be honest, very, very, very sympathetic to that. The Chelsea match will be interesting against a Pochettino team that has not clicked, but has Cole Palmer in unreal form.
Penalty merchant. No, he's really good, and wouldn't have been a bad pickup for our winger profile last summer.
Yeah, so someone in the Discord was saying, hey, Nathan, look, City let Cole Palmer go to Chelsea. Mm. Would they maybe let Rico Lewis come to Spurs?
No, because he's involved in their first team squad more than Palmer was, and he gives them like a role differential thing that Palmer doesn't, because they got Grealish and Doku and they're bringing in Savio and, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. So the argument against that, which I put forward the same argument you just put forward, the argument against that was Rico Lewis is not the long-term Kyle Walker replacement. How can he be? He's 5 foot tall. Mm. And City want to build this team of huge and athletic, versatile defenders like, you know, Vardiol and Akanji and Walker.
It looks like they're probably going to take a step towards having wingers in wide areas, starting maybe Doku and Grealish at the same time, because it turns out Gvardiol out wide with a ton of time and space on the ball isn't all that beneficial to them, and it's mainly massively undermined their season to date. But yeah, Rico, you know, can play either fullback in the midfield, I think, probably. So he gives them lots of options, and then they can go and look for Calvin Bassey to replace Kyle Walker in the long term, as well as keeping Lewis in the squad to play a variety of different roles. So I don't think they'll be moving him on anytime soon. Is he homegrown and club trained?
Yeah, exactly. And he's extremely good as well.
Speaking of homegrown and club trained, while we're at it, I've been doing some right back scouting, but I've also been listening to what you had to say, Windy, and I was also listening to, I read a thread by Sharky. Is he Belgium Spurs or something on Twitter? Mm-hmm. Something like that? The underscore in there somewhere. And you've both been making the point about homegrown and club trained players. And I think it is fair to say, I think it's a reasonable comment to make that if we move Skip on, we kind of have to bring in Kyle Walker-Peters due to...
Or Marcus Edwards.
And I don't think we're going to be bringing in Marcus Edwards. So I've got a list of right backs that is half done, but I think we kind of need to bring in Kyle Walker-Peters, who can play both sides. He's homegrown, club trained. If we were to also bring in the likes of Ito, who can play both left centre back and left back, that would give us pretty strong depth. I would bring in another right back on top of that, but that's controversial, it turns out. Making Kyle Walker-Peters third choice for both sides, and therefore kind of second choice, because Ito will be second choice to the centre back, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I think, and I've also come around to accepting that our right back, for some reason, doesn't need to have any defensive ability at all. It doesn't seem to be a problem for us. So that really maximises the value of Kyle Walker-Peters.
Absolutely, yeah. I also do feel like he has unfinished business at Spurs. He never really got a fair crack of the whip, and is clearly better than he ever showed in Spurs colours. Like, very, very competent player. That said, Leo Black is really good. He's not physically ready yet. He needs to hit the gym over the summer.
Will Kyle Walker-Peters ever be physically ready?
Well, this is it, isn't it? That's the point I was going to go on to make. If we're going to sign Kyle Walker-Peters, why not just give Leo Black a try? Let's see. Right, thank you, Nathan, for carrying the pod today. It's been much appreciated. I am now going to go and lie down.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Bardi, and our tactics guy, Nathan. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/theextrainch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Trayton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.